And we are rolling. Today is Friday, March 4th, 2016, and I am in the lovely Wickenburg home of Dan and Patty Doom. And we're going to talk to them about their lives. So, good morning.
Good morning.
Don't look nervous. Dan, I want to start with you. Tell me a little bit about where you were born, a little bit about your mom that you just mentioned, and how you made your way to Wickenburg.
Okay. Yeah, I'm a native Arizonian. I was born in Phoenix in 1942. Went to first grade, I think, at Garfield Elementary School. And then I had my family move to Congress Junction, Arizona. And we opened up a service station in Congress. It was the first station on the new highway that was Highway 71, and my dad had family members, relatives who owned property, and that's how we got the property to build the station, and actually ran that station until my dad sold out many years later. But in the meantime, my family, I was five boys and one girl, and we all worked there at the station. I went to
71.
Yeah, when we moved up there, Highway 71 was just being built, and we opened that station, and Dan Snyder was the agent here for Chevron, Standard Oil of California at that time, and he was quite concerned that we would not survive up there. At that time, Highway 93 that went to Vegas came through Highway 71 in Congress, and you came into Wickenburg. The bypass was not built at that point, so you had to come through the front of our station into Congress, then into Wickenburg. And of course, 93 was a dirt road. There were people who got stuck out there and were out there for days.
Oh, no.
But to make a long story short, Dan Snyder was a transfer agent here for Standard Oil of California. He delivered the gas to us and told us that if we ever sold 10,000 gallons of gas, he'd take us out to dinner. And we sold that the first month we were open. And from that time on, the traffic between Phoenix and Las Vegas grew. The roads got better. And eventually, it provided a very good living for my dad and his entire family of five boys and one girl. And we took care of neighbors. My grandmother lived across the street. And any other senior citizens that lived, my mother would, when she fed us, she would also have any leftovers would go to folks that lived around the community. Was very sharing, very outgoing, and but as I graduated through, I went through Congress Elementary School, and then I came to Wickenburg and went to high school in Wickenburg, and from there went to work for Standard Oil Company here in town, and then from there I eventually moved to Phoenix, went to the University of Arizona State University, and got my teaching degree, and came back to Wickenburg, and have been here ever since. So I am now the oldest continuous employee of the Wickenburg School District.
Wow.
Which to me reminds me of being the Pope. You know, it's not necessarily something you want to be because, you know, the Pope dies and they send up a smoke signal. Well, I'm the guy on the list that's number one, and eventually I'm going to go, you know, so somebody else will take over that position. But I've been here 45 to 50 years with the school district. And I mention often that my mother went to high school here as well. I used to tell my kids that as a teacher, I would mention that my wife was a graduate of Wickenburg High School, and my kids have also graduated from Wickenburg High School. And I've got grandkids now who have graduated from Wickenburg High School. And so I finish up by telling them, and also my mother graduated from Wickenburg High School in the second year that it was the Wickenburg High School District. And their question would always be, well, how old are you, Mr. Doom? And it had no bearing on how old I was, but, you know, they thought it just made me ancient, which is probably, at this point, I'm starting to feel that way. But so, anyway, that's a thumb sketch.
Coming into sports.
Oh,
can I backtrack a little bit?
Sure.
Tell me a little bit more about your mom. What was her maiden name, and how did she make her way to Wickenburg?
Well, her dad was a Texas Ranger and had married a woman. in the King's Ranch in Texas, and he met her. There had been a raid on the ranch, and the Rangers had gone there, and he had told her that he would come back and marry her, which he did. And eventually, they moved to Arizona for work. He was a miner and worked in Dos Cabezas and a lot of the mining towns back in the late 1800s and early 1900s, and finally ended up in Wickenburg, and he became a night watchman, marshal type thing here in the town of Wickenburg. And there was 11 kids in their family, and my mother was the youngest of the group, and that's how she ended up going to high school here in Wickenburg.
Well, and what was the last name again?
Deck, D-E-C-K, okay. Esther Deck. So, other than that, I still have all her, when she graduated, she saved her diploma, and she was a member of the W Club, and I have all those things mounted on a frame, and I presented that to the school board, and if you go into the school board office now, you will see a frame that has her diploma, the W Club that she belonged to, and she was quite active in school. I've got an annual with her pictures and her family. And
that's amazing. What's the W Club?
It was the Wickenburg Wranglers. Any participant that played a sport was involved in the Wrangler Club, and it was just a club. And they awarded you athletic letters, and just a typical high school club.
Yeah. I'm going to turn over to Patty now and tell me a little bit about where you were born here in Wickenburg. How did your family come here? And tell me about the schools you went to.
Well, my grandparents came here in the 1920s from Colorado. My grandfather was a kind of an odd job person. Finished carpenter. As a matter of fact, he did that all his life. He was a finished carpenter, never owned a power tool. We have a lot of stuff here that he made in our house. And my grandmother was a housewife, but she also worked out at what's now Forepaugh, which at one time was not a prison, but a Japanese camp.
Internment camp.
Yeah, and wow. Something. She worked out there for something. And I can't remember because I wasn't born, but that was my dad's side of the family. And my dad finished high school. They lived on the Hassayampa River when they came here in a tent. And they shot rabbits and ate mesquite beans. And that's how they lived. There was four kids in their family, my dad and his siblings. And my grandfather ended up going to different cities to work because to, bring home money for the family. One of my uncles from my dad's brother worked at the local, what turned into being a Safeway store. And so he was the only one that had a job at that time. And he brought home enough money for them to put together stuff to make food anyway. My dad worked at the Vulture Mine twice. He also worked on some of the highways in and around Arizona and New Mexico.
Right. Back up and tell him about where he graduated from high school and how old he was.
Oh, yeah. He was 15 when he graduated from high school, but he graduated in Phoenix at Phoenix Union.
There were 5,000 students at that time going to school there. It was one of the largest in the Southwest.
So he was pretty young, and when he started his working, he worked in many, many odd jobs. He worked in a steel company and, like I said, on the highways, roads. The original Yarnell Hill, he worked on the paving of that, and then some other places up north and of there, and I can't remember where they are. My mother came here from the Vermont and New Hampshire, and she came on a train. Her parents didn't want her to come because they were afraid of the Indians. And she came out as a helper a man needed somebody to take care of his daughter that had TB. And at that time, Arizona was a TB. They had several sanitariums here. And she accompanied on the train. She had been to nursing school, but she didn't quite finish because she had a breakdown at school. And they sent her home to die, and she decided not to. And so, anyway, that's how she got out here. And she did work at the little hospital, which is now the thrift store. That was the first hospital. And she worked there as a nurse for a short time. That's where she met my dad, because he had been hurt in a conveyor belt accident, broke his arm at Vulture Mine. And that's where they met. So that was in the late 30s. And they got married in 38. And they proceeded to have my brother and my sister and myself. So we all went to school here, graduated from here, and we all ended up with a college degree. My brother went to the Naval Academy. My sister graduated from college with a business degree, and I graduated late in life from nursing school.
Did you go to the school that was over where Bash's and all of that is?
There was a whole school there. And that was the elementary school, the little red schoolhouse. So I went to first grade there because we didn't have kindergarten. My brother did 1 year. He was older than me, 2 years. And they did have some kind of a kindergarten. But I think we lived in Mesa then. We lived in Mesa for a few months or something. I can't remember that either because I wasn't there. But we all three went to the little red schoolhouse for first grade. But that was the whole school. And it was first through eighth grade. And, of course, that's all that's left. And, many memories. And also where Bash's was a little town where, you know, the Spanish people lived. That's all gone now, too. But
did you have a lot of the Mexican kids in your class with you? Was everybody all in one?
Oh, yeah, we all went to school together. We didn't know the difference. We were all in school because they lived right there by that grade school. And then the high school is where the Haciampa school is, and those were the only two schools, of course, then, when I was in school. And as a matter of fact, the high school is where I met him. And he was in...
That would be Dan.
That would be... he was in sports, and I was a cheerleader, and that's how we kind of met.
Wow.
So that goes back quite a few years, too.
Wow. I've talked to so many people whose families have lived here for so long. It's an amazing story. And there's just this little town, you know. That's why I love Wickenburg history. But this isn't about me.
Well, my family started a tradition, too, that you might be interested in from at Vulture Peak when my parents first got married. Him and his sibling brothers and his parents would travel and take the Thanksgiving dinner, the whole dinner, and take it out to a wash out there by the Vulture Peak, eat the dinner, and then everybody would climb Vulture Peak. Of course, you had at the time there was no roads out there, so they had to walk across the mountains to get to climb the peak, and there's something. Place up there where you could put names in. Well, that was a tradition that was started in the late 30s, and it's happened every year since then with whoever family is available. And we have, you know, there can be 10 people or there could be 55 people. It depends on who's around and who can come, and we still take the whole dinner out there. And
Same spot.
We've got pictures of my family, my brother and his bassinet. And so it's the same wash. There are some of the same bushes there, if you can believe that. And, yeah, that's still going on every year.
And her dad, by the way, became a contractor here in Wickenburg and has built many, many of the buildings and homes here in the surrounding area, including this house, as well as the library and Jones Ford building, and
he was in business for 25 years. He was a building contractor, and
What was his name? What was your family?
It was called, my last name was Cook, C-O-O with an E on the end, and his business was called Cook Brothers Construction. So he built hundreds of houses in this place.
His whole life was, and he hit it at the right time, too. That's when Wickenburg started to grow, and he met a lot of his clients would come out here during the winter, they'd play golf, and he became a golfer, and that's how he introduced me to the game of golf. All right, I am now the golf coach at the high school.
And, I saw your letter in the paper, by the way.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he taught me a lot of lessons too. I have really good memories of him, you know, and some of the things he would say, you know, it's your reputation is probably the most important thing you've got, and so, you know, be careful of your reputation. And he was a man of honesty. I mean, he would never, in golf, you learn really quick if you're playing against honest people or not. And it's changed quite a bit, I think, from those days. Those guys would really rather give themselves a penalty than even have a question of whether there was a violation or a rule infraction. And today it's just totally different. It's like everybody's out there to inflate their handicap, and but it's changed.
Where did he play golf in the early days?
Well, the course was built in the 50s out here. The first course, the Wickenburg Country Club, was.
Oh, so where it is now?
But it's only a 9-hole course.
Oh, okay.
It's a 9-hole course, and he would he loved the game, and both he and his Shirley, his wife, would were members, and. That's where he'd meet a lot of his clients. He would get to know them out there, and they'd come out, and eventually they'd like to come back out to Wickenburg and settle and retire out here, and they would contact him, and he ended up being a major builder in Wickenburg.
He built it. When they first started at the Lost Cab, they started the, and I can't remember the name of it, the...
Casitas?
Not the Casitas, the new part, that we called it the new part then. And it's a lot really nice, really nice homes in there. As a matter of fact, the vice president's family lived there.
Yeah, like Quayles lived.
The Quayles lived out there.
He built that house. I worked on that house as a teenager, going to school. One summer I worked on that house, and
my father built a house down below town when there was we had a huge flood here in 1970. And he was building this house down on the river bottom, and he told the guy, this is going to flood someday, it's going to, and he said, I don't care, I want to build it, and he built it. The house was nearly done when the flood came, and it was right in the floodplain, and the water ran right through it, but to the top of the windows and doors, and when it was over, the house was still standing. They cleaned it up, and it's still there. I mean, it turned into being a beautiful home, and it's still there today. It's very beautiful.
Wow.
And
Reverend Wahar was the name of the guy that had the home built. He was a traveling, preacher of some sort
kind of
for the lettuce pickers, I guess.
Migrant workers.
Wow.
It was just it was a story. You know, you get a house built by Cook Brothers, it's there forever because it survived that flood. He lost some equipment, heavy equipment that he used to build, but the house was still there.
Wow.
So, I was telling her that your house up here on the corner of, what's the address there, Washington or whatever? No, not Washington, Jefferson.
Jefferson.
And he had built that house, and it was fairly modern home at the time. I don't know what year it was built.
Like 55.
And do you remember some of the amenities that were built into it? I mean, it had pull-out things
it had
that were...
cabinet pull-out drawers in the cabinets.
Wow.
And the house across the street was for the Roy Coxwell, who was the owner of... Rancho Grande Motel. And so they had many parties down there for the Lost Cab people that came out for the ride, the DC ride.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so that's down there at Jefferson and Silver Road, right?
Right down here.
Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's a lot of homes here that were A lot of history.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of which, I want to go back to you, Dan. Tell me a little bit about going to school in Congress with another teeny tiny little schoolhouse.
Yeah, it was all grades one through. No, it was not all grades. It was like 1 through 4 was in one side, and then 5th through 8th grade was in the other side. And
same building.
And I just learned that they have torn down the old Congress school. That it finally had gotten to the point that the roof was leaking, and I guess Yavapai County was the owner of the property, and so they elected to go ahead and tear it down. And I was kind of, to my way of thinking, it probably should have been refurbished and made into a museum or something that, you know, for the senior citizens. And it could have been done. Something could have been done. But
plus, it was a mining town from old, and his aunt worked for a lot of the miners would come in at the old hotel up there, and she was a cook. She cooked for, you know, all these miners, because it was everything. The mining industry was all around here, was active, you know.
Yeah, the Congress Mine was a major producer at the time.
When his aunt was, you know, younger.
And yeah. She ended up, her and her husband, Oscar, who was my uncle, the brother of my mother, Esther, Oscar Deck, and married Belle Herskowitz. And together, they acquired a lot of property up in the Congress area. And that's how they, when that road came in, 71, they invited my dad to come up. He had been involved in the automotive business and invited him to come up and open the station. And pretty much gave him the property to open up, you know, to build a station. And that's how we got started up there.
Wow.
So, anyway, that's...
Herskowitz is another name that I've heard quite a bit.
Oh, yeah, they're...
Oh, they're a huge family, and his... were married...
And,
two brothers of you, two uncles were married to two Herskowitzes. So,
oh, that's the same thing in my family.
Yeah, because he had, like he said, his mother was one of many children. And it was two of her brothers were married to two Herskowitzes.
Oscar Deck was married to Belle Herskowitz, and who was the other?
The one from California.
Oh, yeah, well, that was Helen. Okay. Helen Deck was married to. Had the tomato farms. Didn't
no,
it?
Helen Herskowitz.
Helen.
No, it wasn't. There was the two Herskowitz women were married to two brothers.
Helen was the sister of Esther.
I know.
Helen,
but it wasn't. She wasn't Herskowitz. Well,
we won't worry about that.
I also knew the Boettos, and Tony Boetto, who died, was a shop teacher, and when we were in high school, and he died, but his wife Bonnie was a substitute teacher and had been for years. She never taught regularly, and they lived right next door to us because my dad had built this house, the one on Jefferson and Sylvan, so the Boetto property was right adjoining to it. And of course Mrs. Boetto had been one of my substitute teachers all through grade school, so I knew her very well.
Wow. And yeah. Of course the Wickenburg Boetto house up there.
Oh yes.
So that was the same family.
Oh yes. So Bonnie kept after her husband Tony he died of a heart attack very young, but she kept it, and she lived there with a brother of hers for a long time, but then she went down to ASU, which was, I don't know if it was, yes, and she taught English down there. And then, but she would come here on the weekends and stay in her house, and then she got too old to do that, so she started living in a home. And I used to go down and pick her up and bring her up here and let her visit. She'd stay with me, but then she'd go visit her house and walk around and remember. And so where Boetto Park now was a grove, and she had plans to do stuff, and it never happened. So I believe it was sold to the city after she passed away, and they made it Boetto Park. And then Cindy, of course, took over, and that's, everybody knows about Cindy and all that she's done with.
Cindy Thrasher.
Yeah. Cindy Thrasher with the Boedo House, of which he's been a part of too, because he's part of the Historical Society.
Oh, yeah. I know Cindy well.
Yeah.
Did Mrs. Boedo ever talk about the family and the relation with Henry Wickenburg? Or were there any sort of stories about Henry Wickenburg that passed down?
I don't think she did. Mm-hmm. You know, she could have whether he really, really committed suicide has always been a question. And nobody will ever know that.
No.
And but he lived in the house, of course. They bought it. Boedo's, Mr. Tony Boedo's dad actually bought the house.
Mm-hmm. What was his name?
Tony's dad? I can't remember.
Oh, I think I knew it once, but I can't remember.
John?
John is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, John.
John Boedo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he bought the house. And then when Tony grew up part of his years there. And then he taught high school here. I believe he died when he was less than 50.
Oh, wow.
But he had had a heart attack. Oh. So that was all part of the Wickenburg history, too.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your nursing career here in town.
Well, it's not... I was... After I raised my kids, so that was kind of different. I went to school as an adult, an older adult. And I worked at a doctor's office for 6 years. And then I worked for a hospice for a year. And then the last 11 years, I worked at Ramuda at the eating disorder.
Wow.
Well, you mentioned Dr. Firth.
Dr. Firth, I worked for his office for 6 years.
Oh, I knew someone in town. He was his doctor. I was such a shame.
Yeah, yes. Dr. Firth was the greatest, best and greatest.
That's what my friend said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's
such a shame.
And now I volunteer at the hospital, and I go and I visit with the patients, and if I get somebody that's older and they remember, you know, because he had thousands of patients, but he knew them all. He knew them, and they knew that he knew them.
Yeah.
And they just speak, there's no one like Dr. Firth.
That's a huge hole.
And another sudden heart attack, you know? Yeah. One of those.
Very sad. Dan, let's go back to you and tell me how you got your teaching career off the ground here in town.
Well, interesting. That's kind of my first year here, yeah. I signed a contract it was $5,000 to be a teacher for the year. And I needed to... We had just had this house built, and we went through farm home loan in this house. My father-in-law, Harry Cook, built the house, but we got the loan through farm home, and it was $15,200 for the home. My mortgage payment was $92 a month, but I only made $5,000 the first year. And as it turned out, my mortgage payment actually became my smallest payment that I had, you know, my electricity and water and sewer and all that became more than my mortgage payment. But we've never moved, stayed right here. I'm kind of glad that we did.
When you started teaching, you were coaching on the side, and you were teaching school one or two nights at night classes for adults. And, of course, teachers have to go back to school for their master's, so he was always doing night classes and going summers for things. And this went on for years. And
yeah.
So you never just teach a class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he had a lot of things going.
Yeah, I worked part-time for the newspaper as well. I worked for
Wickenburg Sun.
The Wickenburg Sun when the Quails owned it.
Mm-hmm.
And... I was in charge of subscriptions at the time, and it was just a weekend kind of a job at the time. But and then I would teach adult classes at night, and I also went to night school at ASU for my master's. I remember one day H.K. McLennan had called me and said he'd like to have meet with me and have a cup of coffee at the local Gold Nugget restaurant, and so I met him down there. I had no idea why he wanted to talk to me, but he had known my family. He knew my mother, as a matter of fact. He was a teacher at the time and a superintendent I believe, at the time, and he knew my entire family that I wasn't aware of. And he said, he told me, he says, asked me if I had my master's degree, and I said, no. I said, as a matter of fact, I'm really tired of school, and I'm not looking forward to going back to school. And he said, well, you need to go now while you can. He says, it's if you don't do it now, it becomes a lot harder down the road. And he got up and left, and that was it. You know, he just told me that, and I got to thinking, you know, that man made a special trip down here just to tell me that I needed to go back and get my master's.
Wow.
And so I said, you know, I'm going to trust him. And I started working on my master's, and it was nighttime. It'd be midnight before I'd get home, get up at 6 in the morning, get ready for school, and I did that for a long period of time. And, you know, later on, after a couple of years, I got my master's, and many years later, I said, you know, I could no more do that today than anything. You know, he was absolutely right. You know, he knew exactly what he was talking about. He knew that I was young enough and had enough energy at that time to pull it all off and do it, which I did. So I give him I thank him for that bit of information.
And you also did the thing when...
Oh, yeah, that's another story about HK.
Gravestone.
I was jogging and running around up here by the cemetery, and I saw a lady with a clipboard going down from one cemetery to another, and what got my attention was she had a clipboard, which reminded me about Coach, you know. And I said, do you mind telling me what you're doing, you know? She said, well, yeah, I'm with the Pioneer Historical thing from the state of Arizona, and I am going through marking all these unmarked graves that we have here. I said, really? There's unmarked graves? Wow. Yeah, she said, like right here. She pointed down to the ground and said, H.K. McClennan is buried here, and there's no marker for him. And his wife was there as well. And I said, what? H.K. McClennan? We have a school named H.K. McClennan School. He's got no headstone here on his... No, she says, just... Well, apparently, it had just been left. You know, nobody had taken care of it. He didn't really, you know... He just didn't see to it that he had a headstone, you know. And I said, well, somebody needs to do something. So I started to drive, and I started collecting money. And if you go out there today, you will see this nice, beautiful monument with his and her picture. They're like their 50th wedding anniversary picture. And that was all through funds that the town of people donated to.
And past students that we contacted.
Oh, yeah. The past students would call. They'd say, what? He needs... How much do you need? You know, they just loved him. Okay, these people that were, they just had so many good memories of H.K. McClennan. It was really interesting.
When did he pass?
It's been quite a while. It's out there. It's been 30 years.
The school,
yeah.
That was named after him is now the Christian Academy, but it was McClennan School. And it was K through when they had to make, you know, they moved them up there. First of all, it was sixth grade through eighth grade, but then they had to move everybody up there because they had the other school burnt down and they tore down stuff where their little red schoolhouse
right.
is.
Oh,
and
so somebody told me it was an arson fire or something.
Well,
it?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Where was this?
The old grade school.
Hmm.
Yeah, where I went, I graduated from eighth grade there.
When did they build the new high school?
12, 15 years ago.
The new one I heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was right around...
It's got to be because Sam graduated from there, so that was in...
Sam graduated in 86.
Yeah.
This was the new Vulture Mine, the
no,
high school?
No, Vulture Peak is a great...
Oh, Vulture school. Peak is what you're talking about,
no.
right?
No, the
no.
high school
the
was...
School.
The new high school...
2005, maybe?
Oh, no.
2000. And I think it was right around 2000, beginning of 2000. And because I worked out there up until 2005. I had taken early retirement, and then I worked part-time for a few years. And I was working out there.
Why did they build a new one? They just needed a bigger or better facility? Or?
I won't answer that because you'll have to answer that.
Well, I don't. I just think it's pretty obvious that it was everything was downtown and central, you know, just pretty tightly located. With the traffic situation that we have now, can you imagine what it would be like if, even with the roundabout, we've got all the traffic in town and trailers, and it's probably a good thing that it was built out there, and the town has expanded. And yeah, I think now, looking back, it probably was a wise decision. At the time, you know, it was a small little community, and people liked the idea of being close to the school. And
not much of the school. The original school, it's all gone except for the little old gym. And so many of the people that would come for reunions are really disappointed because that's where they'd meet, is at the school. But now that it's the Hacienda School, it's nothing like what all of us went to school. So it's like, you know, our school's gone. What's the deal of the reunion? Our school's gone. So it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I've talked to a number of people this week who, all went to the same schools, you know, different times, but everybody has that same connection to all these schools that I've heard about.
Mm-hmm. And there was just the grade school, the Wickenburg number 9 grade school, and the high school, and that was it. When we graduated from high school.
Well, school district number 9, which I think has to do with we were the 9th district in the state of Arizona. You know, there was, of course, Phoenix and Tucson would have, like, districts 1, 2, 3, and so on. But we were up there.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the community events you used to participate in, especially when you were growing up, spending time in town when you were in, you know, grade school and high school. What do kids do? For fun.
Sports, mm-hmm. pretty much, and the theater was open. Back then it was Swara Theater, and they changed the movies four times a week, and we always went to every movie. And sports, and, you know, the high school dances. And
Gold Rush days.
Gold Rush days.
They elect Gold Rush Queen. That was always a beauty pageant. And usually they were a student.
My sister was a Gold Rush Queen 1 year. And that's what all the high school wannabe girls is enter that and see if you could win the beauty contest. Yeah. Then they started putting horsemanship in, and that did away with a lot of people because, you know, the pretty girls, so to speak, and they didn't know how to ride a horse. So
didn't have the skills enough. Mm-hmm. Horsemanship skills, I guess.
There were, like, the horse people in town and the not horse people in town.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that makes mm-hmm. sense. Mm-hmm. Well, it was a very diverse kind of place to live for this being so small.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I've had a couple people tell me about the dances at Bowman's Barn.
Oh, yes.
Tell me your experiences there.
With the Saturday night Bowman's Barn?
Oh, everybody smiles when I mention that.
Yeah, as a teenager, it was you know, something to do on a Saturday night, and
so
live
it was
band.
Live and band, yeah.
And that was out where?
It's still there.
It's where Grantham Fence is at, located.
The barn is still, the building is still there.
Yeah.
And that's out on
Highway.
It's just going towards
89, headed towards Prescott.
It's before the other roundabout out there on the other side. Or it's right there at the roundabout. First roundabout out there. And then you turn off and go right, you know, north off of it.
The arena, the roping arena is down there as well.
Yeah.
Bowman's Barn,
I hope they have to drive by.
But it's not right on the highway. You have to get off the highway and go back 1,000 feet maybe?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. Okay. The barn is still there, yeah. And you had a mixture of cowboys who worked in the community, mm-hmm. and you had a mixture of, you know, young kids that would go out there. And so just about anything and everything would happen out there.
There was a lot of trouble out there, a lot of trouble.
That's what I heard. Yeah,
Mr. Bowman, he ran it pretty well. I mean, he kept his eye and finger on things. But what occurred before and after was always different, you know.
Yeah.
he couldn't quite control everything that went on outside as well as pretty well contained it inside.
Did you ever meet Everett Bowman?
Oh, yeah. We all knew Everett Bowman.
Oh, tell me about him.
Well, I was pretty young. Friendly. His daughter, Nelda, of course, still lives here, Nelda Gardner. And as a matter of fact, her husband, Bill, just... Nelda was a rodeo queen. I was just a girl. We looked up to Nelda because she was so pretty, and she get on her horse, and she could... She was flashy, and she was good. She participated in rodeos. Plus, she went all around, as did Everett, because her dad was a world famous cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so I knew Nelda better than I did him, because we all knew about him because he was a Wickenburg person. But Nelda was our idol because she was so pretty and perfect. I mean, she was a perfect showmanship lady. Oh, she was so good on it, and very horsemanship.
Wow.
Very good. And she still lives here. So she probably, I don't know if you've talked to her, but you might, Nelda Gardner, you might want to, she's someone that would, she goes way back too.
Oh, I will talk.
And she would be in a different, she was a cowgirl, so she was in a different, I was not, we were not cowboy people. So.
As it turns out, she had a son, Sean Gardner.
Sean?
No, not Sean. It was the other Gardner. There was a...
No, Sean was hers.
Well,
Roy Gardner was a different family.
Mm-hmm. But I had two of them. I had two Gardners on my track team, and I saw him when... I just saw him at the funeral Nelda's...
No, that's his dad. When Nelda married Bill, then she had... Sean is her only child.
And
he had some kids, but...
He was very good. I mean, outstanding. One of the best athletes that I ever coached, really. Just extremely... And I think it had a lot to do with Nelda, because the boy... They had actually taken him to... He had done dance lessons and ballet lessons and things like that. His flexibility, he was only just an average height.
I have to go to the bathroom.
But extremely flexible. And he had all these moves that... And in hurdling, he was a hurdler. He was he won the Outstanding Southwest Award for the entire state of Arizona as a hurdler. And was extremely gifted. And ended up, he's a teacher now up in Utah. But he won just about every event he ever entered. Was just really an outstanding young man.
Well, tell me about the different sports you've coached over the years.
Well, that's a good question, really. Yeah, I have been involved in just about everything. My first job here was as an assistant coach to Ralph Moran. I had played for Ralph, and when I came back, I was hired on as an assistant coach. And I can remember to this day the very first day I ever, my first day of coaching at the high school. And Ralph had said something that stuck with me. The first day that we met, he introduced me, and he said, he's our assistant coach, and if he says something, you do it. You know, it's like he gave me authority to be the assistant coach, you know. And I thought, wow, I wasn't much older than the kids that I was coaching. But anyway, that was my first job of coaching. And from there, I had branched out into, there was no track team. So, but schools were offering track around, and so I started a track program, even though we didn't have a track. We just had the football field. And I got some kids together, and they did very, very well. And it wasn't much longer that the school district decided to take some of the Simpson property down here, and they made put in a track. And we eventually became the state champions in track and field, and we had
many 25 years
worth of, good times, hard times, and fun times. My own kids participated in track.
It's wonderful.
And it wasn't, but then I got to the point where I noticed that a lot of schools were doing, we had milers and two milers, and a lot of those kids ran cross-country, but we had no cross-country program. So one of my assistant coaches had been a cross-country runner from Michigan, and so I got him. I started a cross-country program and got it going for a couple of years, and then I turned it over to my assistant, and he became, and he's still here,
he
and
still
that's
has
Doug,
it.
Doug Clements. He's still the coach here. So, but while I was doing that, I was also coaching basketball. I had been a JV basketball coach as well. It fit in between football and track. There was basketball, so I could do that as well.
And girls basketball.
And then I did girls basketball, which was probably, to me, in my way of thinking, the most difficult sport I ever coached was the girls basketball.
Not just because it's girls.
No, it was just, it's
different.
Very different. You, when I would see a good basketball, a girls basketball team, I know how much work they put into it. Tremendous amount of work goes into girls basketball if you're going to be good. We would play teams from the Indian Reservation, and that's all they did. They did two things. They would run cross country and play basketball. So when basketball season came, it was constant, fast break, run as fast as you can run, helter-skelter, just up and down the court, and they were good shooters. And so it was really tough to coach girls that didn't play, you know, hadn't been brought up through that system.
Right. Which Indian reservations did you play against?
Well, from Parker, there was a lot of Indian, there's an Indian reservation around there as well. And then when you get to state, there'd always be teams from up north that would come
St.
down.
John's
and they're, to that, to this day, they're still the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
The entire reservation closes down and they all come down to the state tournaments. And
right.
I think they've won every year. You know, cross country and girls basketball. It's just a combination that they like. But anyway, from there, I knew Bob Freese, who had started the golf program here. And when I, he was getting up in years, and he got to the point where he didn't like driving the team. It was just too, you know, his driving skills, I guess, he didn't feel comfortable. But he had had some good teams. He had developed some outstanding golf teams, and he asked me, he knew that I played golf, and he says, asked me if I'd be interested, and I said yes. And so that was, I don't know how many years ago that was. It's been 20 some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still coaching. And you said you read the letter. Mm-hmm. I'm still raising money and trying to. Things have changed quite a bit from back in the early days as far as the school and the their ability to fund sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, we basically buy our own everything. Mm-hmm. We buy our own shirts, our own equipment. If we go somewhere, we pay our own way. We buy our own meals. They do provide transportation. And for the most part, that's it. And so it's all sports. I mean, it's just the fact that the schools don't get enough money, I guess, from the state to be able to fund their programs the way they used to. But nevertheless, I'd probably do it for nothing. So, you know, it's just you know, a lot of it, in a way, is a reflection of her father, you know, my tribute to him. He got me started. I always start off teaching kids golf the same way he taught me. He said, I still remember this to this day. You know, he gave me a club, and he says, now this is a grip. He says, and he showed me the grip, and he put my hands on there, and don't change it. And get two balls, put one in your back pocket, and always carry two balls with you. Yeah, of course. I mean, when you're beginning, you need two balls because you're never hitting the ball to begin with. And so you're always reaching back and starting off. So I start every kid off with the same thing I was taught, all right? And it's kind of funny. But most kids after a year are better than I am. I mean, I've got some young kids out there today that are just outstanding golfers.
Well, you've got like three generations. You started teaching in 68, so it's pretty close to being 50 years. So you've got kids, three generations of kids.
Right, yeah. It's amazing. It's
in coaching and teaching.
It's really, the payback is that you know, there's a good payback in terms of satisfaction from, you know, dealing with, I have good memories of a lot of these students that I had in the past, and then their kids come up, and, you know, I automatically already liked the kid to begin with because I liked his dad or his mom, you know, and so it's, anyway, it's been enjoyable so far.
And you, there's so many families here in town. They stay here. They raise their kids here. Their kids stay here. They get married. I mean, that's amazing.
Or they go and come back.
They go and come back, mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? What is it about Wickenburg that keeps people here, keeps people coming back?
A lot of them just coming back, and they, I don't know.
I don't think they like the city as much. I mean, the good thing about Wickenburg is that you're only 45 minutes away from the valley, you know. So it's not like you're really isolated. You're close enough to the valley if you want to use the valley, yet you're in an area that's open. You can be outdoors. You don't have the crime, basically. You don't have the, you do have drugs, but I don't believe it's the gangs. And I've talked to kids and parents who brought their kids up here from Phoenix to go to school. And they want their kids out of that environment. They want them in a better environment. And you go to a huge school, you don't have the opportunities to participate. If a youngster wanted to play sports, you know, here, anybody that wants to play is going to play, is going to be able to participate. And that's not true in the Valley. I don't think, you know, unless you've started in grade school and been in junior high programs and everything else, it's very difficult for kids to move up.
And
but
people come back here to retire because they remember Wickenburg as a much smaller town. When we grew up, there was less than 1,500 people here, 1,200, something like that. I mean, when I was in high school. So it was a really, really small town. Mm-hmm. We could drive, and my dad would put us in the back of his truck, and we'd put our sheets on because we had capes on it. You can't do this today. But he would drive us through. My dad was crazy, but we sure had a lot of fun. We'd put our capes on, stand up in the back of the pickup truck, and drive through town with our capes flying out behind us.
Yeah,
I just
he
can't.
Was that way. He, was
he just, my dad, there wasn't anything that we didn't experience. He was just a great, I had a wonderful growing up years, wonderful childhood.
Wow.
Wouldn't he occasionally see kids, little young kids playing somewhere, and he'd load them up in his truck, go buy him ice cream?
Yep.
And then drive them back, and they'd get out with their cones, and, you know, parents had no idea that they'd gone out for ice cream.
We'd go to the lakes, and he always supplied everything, and we'd take all of our friends, and, you know, we'd have a pickup truck, and then the boats on the back, and another car full of kids, and my dad paid for everything, you know, and we learned to water ski that way, and just, he didn't know how to do any of that stuff, but he taught himself so that he could teach us.
Yeah.
And then we just take all of our friends. We'd go to Parker to Lake Havasu, and
he did everything extremely fast, though. He drove fast. And you know, unfortunately, he was born during a time when people, you know, everybody smoked back then, you know, and he was only 140 pound guy, but I mean, he was very intelligent, fast thinker, did everything fast mentally, and did lots of things, all right? You know, he golfed, he boated, he sailed, he'd do anything that he had never, you know, ever wanted to do, he would do.
Mm-hmm.
But his problem was that he was a smoker like my dad was, and they all eventually, you know, it catches up to him.
Yeah. When did he pass?
1983.
Oh.
But he was pretty young. He was 69. And he'd had emphysema for 10 years. But then he couldn't do his business anymore. So then he was hired by the town to be, at the same year I was on the town council, I won a seat on the town council because I was young. It's a long story. And he was hired as the building inspector because he obviously knew the building business, but he could not run a business anymore because of his health problems, but he could be a building inspector. So he was building inspector for, I'm going to say, 8 years at least. Yeah.
Tell me about your time on the town council.
That's interesting. Well, the people, the town got, it was a small town. I had just moved back to Wickenburg, and it was 1968, and they were having some problems back then. You know, it was kind of a good old boys club because all the people that were there, the mayors and the building inspector, the judge, they all were friends. And it was a small town. That's just what you did, and you did whatever. And some of the younger people decided that they didn't like that, and they were going to take over the town. So they did, and they fired the town clerk. They fired all these people. Just let them go. Well, I had just moved back here, and I was horrified. I wrote a letter to the Wickenburg Sun. I said, "This is ridiculous. What's going on?" And anyway, so these townspeople, they came after me and drafted me to run. I think I was 30 then. I can't remember. I was young. And wanted me to run for council. And that was, and Kurt Arnett ran then, too, the one we're talking about. And he and I got the two highest votes. We actually recalled the people that were on the hot shots that had come in. They were recalled. And we were voted back in again. So he was the mayor and I was the vice mayor. Didn't last very long. I was about 3 years.
What kind of issues did you have to deal with or situations?
Well, we started, like the community center was new then. And they were trying to get a liquor license for the community center. And there was a lot of hubbub about that because the local people didn't want to do that, but they realized that they didn't have that, they couldn't hold all their stuff. Oh, I found out a lot of people that didn't pay their bills and you know, their utility bills, and you know, there was a lot of upgrading of the town. That's about all I remember.
Was it fun? Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. Well, I re-ran, but I lost terribly.
Oh.
Yeah. But that was fine. I needed to be home with my kids and my... It is time-consuming because there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of material to read and study and issues to be voted on. And people are always mad about what you do, and you weren't allowed to have, you know, executive session stuff. They talk about you. And really, nothing went on in there. It was an executive stuff that you don't need to air out in the public. But the public decided that anyway, it was different.
Well, weren't you the very, very first woman?
I was the first woman that ever was elected to council. I don't think there's been
some since.
Maybe one or two since then. There was a lady that was appointed because somebody died, and she was appointed. But I was the first woman elected.
And then Coxwell. She ran. She's on the...
Oh, Royce, yeah.
Royce's. She's
Royce has been real active in a lot of things because the Coxwell family goes back to her grandparents. And they her grandparents bought... Have you talked to Royce yet?
She was one of the first people I met when I first came to Wickenburg, and I'll be chatting with her next month.
Yes, and she can give you... Her grandparents started a lot of downtown stuff, so you'll hear a lot from her. She herself remained active in a lot of things.
She's our classmate, basically. She was in the same time period.
Same time period. She was a little younger, but she was in the same time period. Yeah.
That's amazing. I've talked to, I've known people in town in the last, 12 years that I've been coming here. And just this week, I've talked to people and learned so much more, and there's such, like I said, such similar stories about the schools and about the people in town. It's fascinating to me.
It sure is a different town than when we grew up here. Totally.
You know what
different.
I'm thinking? I'd like to take you out. It might be difficult for you to find H.K. McClendon's headstone, even it's situated so far kind of out of the way where people don't normally go.
Well, I love old cemeteries,
but
I love to wander.
The Wickenburg Funeral Home has a list of everybody, though.
Okay. If I can't find it, I'll let you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's on the western side.
Okay.
Okay, and it's more than halfway down south, so it's on this southwest side of the cemetery,
All right.
A quadrant in that, acre and a half on the southwest side there.
Okay. And that's a cemetery out there on Counts.
That's our town cemetery.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
There's another one out by the Garcia Cemetery.
Right, exactly.
But it's much smaller.
Yeah.
I have my grandmother is buried in the Garcia Cemetery.
And there's another one out.
Yeah, Rose, the one that was born on the came from the King's Ranch in Texas. She's
buried in Garcia.
She was of Mexican descent, and apparently that's how I've got a portion of, I don't know.
About an eighth.
An eighth. But she would always, she read her Bible. I remember as a kid growing up, I would see her every day. She'd sit on her porch, and she'd be reading her Bible in Spanish. It was a Spanish Bible. And she smoked Pall Mall cigarettes and drank coffee, black coffee, and smoked Pall Malls and would read her Bible. And if we came over, she'd ask us if we'd like a cigarette. Or were we hungry? She'd make us sopapillas.
She lived
until 86. You know, she'd give us coffee or make us sopapillas, that proper word, I guess, for the word. And or if we wanted a cigarette, didn't make any difference. You know, she was just glad to have us come over. You know. But anyway, she is buried in the Garcia Cemetery, and that goes back. She was passed away, I think, in the early 60s.
Not too much after we got married. Yeah. It was in the 60s sometime.
Early 60s.
Early 60s.
And she was
86.
86 years old then. So.
Wow. So when you were growing up, there weren't that many, or if any, seasonal, you know, snowbird type of people that would come to town?
A few.
There were?
Yeah. And not very many, because it was a very small. And when they'd come, see, they'd go to the dude ranches, because we had all those dude ranches. And so the snowbirds would come there, and that's how my dad ended up, what he called the millionaires, came back. They're billionaires now, but they were millionaires, and they wanted a house. They liked Wickenburg, and they wanted to go on the D.C. ride and that. So they bought little houses on the mountaintops around here, and he built a lot of houses for them.
Wow.
So, yeah, but it was such a different town because it was so much smaller. Of course, now the people, winter visitors, have a second house here, and they just, you know, I think it's like 7,000 now.
I know, and there's such a difference when you, depending on what time of year you come to town. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's like Grand Central Station, and in the summer, of course, it's
dead.
Just a ghost town. Mm-hmm.
It is. When we were in high school here, that's what we didn't really like the summers, because there's not very much, nothing going on. It was, everybody was gone. Everybody left, and it was really boring. All you could do is go to the movies. And the barn, and then Bowman's Barn.
Bowman's Barn. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
So, when you were growing up, did you have air conditioning in your home?
No.
Or you just dealt with it? You just dealt with it?
We had evaporative coolers. As a matter of fact, we just put air conditioning in our house like 2 to 3 years ago.
No, it was fine. As long as it's not humid, evaporative cooling worked really good.
Yeah. And back when we were growing up, the humidity didn't last but maybe 3 weeks. And it just wasn't like it is today. The heat was, it wasn't as hot and not as humid. So everybody just had evap coolers.
Yeah. How did those work? If you could explain that for the recorder, an evap cooler. Is that a swamp cooler? Is that the same?
Same thing.
Same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's air passing through material is wet, mm-hmm. and as it comes through, it's much cooler. As long as it's not humid, it works fine.
Yeah.
But when it's humid,
that 10 degrees humidity, it works just as good as
it's cold.
It can be cold. You know,
turn it off at night.
Wow.
Oh yeah, we turned ours
we
off
had to
at
turn
night
ours
usually.
Off.
Yeah, it would get too cold. But then once in August, if it was raining a lot, then it didn't do anything. You know, it just was blowing humid. It was just didn't cool things down. So, but you had to do some work on it on a yearly basis. You know, you had to get up there and take care of a few things and
change
make sure.
The pads.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm from Northern California, so that's a whole new thing for me.
What part?
I live in Sonoma. I was raised in Marin County, north of San Francisco, but my family has lived in Sonoma for over 100 years.
That's where one of my aunts lived.
Oh.
Was up in the Tracy. No, not Rose. Helen.
Helen, okay.
They had a tomato farms in the Tracy, California area. Now, that's near Sacramento, I think, or.
Yeah, that's close to Sacramento.
And I had an aunt that lived in Sacramento, and then I had an aunt that lived in Tracy that was, had been married to the Herskowitz, Ed Herskowitz. Mm-hmm. Eddie Herskowitz. And of course, he had some sons. That was Bobby and Eddie Herskowitz, but Senior Ed, I guess, was a father. But I've been back there and visited the farm, and he would take me. He took me into. I went deer hunting with him one time with him and his sons, and I was the youngest of the group though, so they made me the stay in camp and wash the dishes sort of guy. But he'd take me into Sacramento. We'd go to boxing matches or. Then we go out to Chinese food or whatever. I mean, just he and I, you know, he enjoyed that kind of stuff, as I did.
Yeah. Well, that's where you get the heat in California. Oh, Sacramento and Tracy and, you know, all of there. That's the California heat. Because I lived in Sacramento for a few years.
Did you?
Yeah.
I still remember the street she lived on. She lived on J Street. All the streets were numbered, like, with letters.
Yeah, letters, yeah.
I remember that. Sending Christmas cards to J Street.
Yeah. Downtown.
Well, she actually worked for the, she was like a radio operator, or when you called the police, she answered the phone and that sort of thing. Dispatcher.
Dispatcher. Yeah. Huh. Yes.
Well, is there anything else about your lives in Wickenburg we haven't covered? You'd like
tons, but you can't remember everything till after you leave. There's a lot to cover.
Well, I think you covered what we really hope to get for this project.
Oh, I should tell you one other thing, too. On the old museum, before it burnt down, they had a bunch of stuff from my grandfather, old trunks and uniforms from the old museum. I'm going to tell you, had a lot of really... one-of-a-kind stuff. It was very, very sad when it burned. Very, very sad. Because it was in the Brayton's commercial. And the Brayton's store was a three-part store. It had a shoe thing, and then it had a grocery store, and then it had a dry goods. And it was a department store of the time. And out in front were the gas pumps. Those old-type gas pumps that had, you could see the gas up in the top of them. But I know we bought our shoes in the shoe store, and they had a basement where they did their supplies, and there was a up and down lifter that, as kids, we just loved it. It's in the middle of the store, and that's how they brought the stuff, the supplies up from the bottom and brought them up on this platform. It was probably 6x6. It was more fun to look over the edge and look down in there, and they'd bring the stuff up. And then the left side was the dry goods, and they had material and linens and a few clothes, and that's the way life was then. We didn't have department stores.
Was it physically partitioned, the different sections, or was it all one big room? And it was
actually you could get in from one to the other, but they had front entrances in all three of them.
Oh wow.
And so you when we'd go up there, whatever we were going to do, because there was no supermarkets, there was Brayton's store. And that's where you bought your, there was that store, and there was a little market around on the main street. There was no store. And Brian's grocery, which was down where, let's see, the end of Golden Nugget. What's that new trilogy on the end there? That was Brian's grocery. And... some of his daughters, one daughter still lives here, was married to Pole. That's another story. But there was no, that was the grocery stores. There wasn't a big store. Just little two or three little markets. But then Brayton's was the biggest store, Brayton's General Store.
So were you saying something about your granddad's stuff that he had what was in there?
Yes, and that, well, that was after it became a museum because Brayton sold out. He had, there were things from his past that were in there that was, like I was, and I don't remember except the uniforms and the trunks.
He was in World War I as a Marine, I guess, and they had, he had a Marine uniform, really, how would you describe it, dark colored suit that he wore.
That original, yes.
Oh my gosh, what a shame to lose that.
Yeah, that was very, very sad to me because the stuff, they have rebuilt it and it's nice, but it's, they lost a lot of the original stuff.
I know, and people all over town donated to make the museum, didn't they?
The first museum, when Mr. McLennan was part of that too.
That's right.
He was a big part of that, and
he worked tirelessly, I think, to get that going. And Roy Coxwell is another one. And some of the downtown, what would you call them, the fathers of Wickenburg.
Yeah, the ones that,
were
the business people. Another interesting thing, too, that might be interesting is the fact that Mariposa Heights was named, I'm named that. My father and Roy Coxwell bought the property, which is, I don't know if you know where that is. You turn at Chase Bank and go north on Mariposa, and then it's now into three different parts. But when it was just desert over there, my dad and Roy Coxwell had bought the property and were going to build out there and build spec houses. And Roy was going to finance it, and my dad was going to build it. And then there was so much stuff that they had to go through to start it. You had to have streets and curbs and all that. They said forget it, and they sold it to the guy that did do it. But in the meantime, I named it. It had to have a name. And I remember my dad says, "Well, let's come up with a name." So that's what I ended up calling it, Mariposa Heights, which is part of Wickenburg now.
Uh huh. And it still is.
Oh yeah, it's in three parts because they've added on, you know, more sections.
I talked to Bill Green this week.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And, you know, I also love old postcards. And so we had our interview, and then we spent another 45 minutes looking at his postcards. And what I really learned from him was some of the buildings that are still here in Wickenburg, and he showed me what they were on some of the old postcards. And one of them was it Frick's? Or
Frick's Indian Store.
Frick's Indian Store. Tell me about that. That's where Vitamin Village is or something right now,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Well, I wasn't into that stuff, but I knew the Fricks, and their kids went to school here, and they were sort of in our time period. One was was older, and one was younger. But I never went in the store because I didn't do Indian stuff, so.
We were not cowboys and Indians out here, believe it or not.
Those were the tourists.
And as it is today, most of the little shops around here are for tourists, and that's the way it was back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, like the old mine supply, it's, in my mind's eye, I can still see Wickenburg, what it looked like back then. And how you drove around and what was there and what was there. And I can see all that stuff. The Greyhound Bus Depot down where Craig's Motorcraft is now. And, you know, it was a different world then. We had two different bus lines here. And where the Gold Nugget restaurant was not Gold Nugget. It was, that was the
Trailways
Bus Depot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been added, it's been remodeled, but it was the original buildings are all still there. Mm-hmm. And that lady, that has the two-story antique thing there in the middle of town across from the motel.
That was the Texas Cafe.
That was the Texas Cafe. Yeah. And I had my parents' friends ran that for quite a few years. Yeah, it was the cafe. And nobody went upstairs then. It was all downstairs.
Tell me about the big hat.
Where is it now? It's gone, isn't it?
I think it got demolished.
It got moved too. When it started, it was downtown.
Next to the theater.
Right next to the theater there. And that was they ended up making it the Chamber of Commerce because it was a big hat. And then they moved it over towards where McDonald's is now because there was no McDonald's then.
They moved the hat.
They moved the hat. And did it move twice?
Because Bill has a postcard and it says Bridge Court.
There's a Bridge Court. Yeah, that's where the quick print is right now.
Mm-hmm. Used to be a Shell station right out front.
There was a Shell station out in the front, and there was a Bridge Court around the back of it. And see, there was only a two-lane bridge across the... When we grew up, there was just a two-lane bridge. And, of course, it's all gone now because they did keep the second two-lane bridge, but the first one's gone. And that was on the edge of the Hassayampa River, the Bridge Court. Maybe that's where they moved it to.
Because it's right there on that postcard. And what we couldn't figure out was when it was there and when it was over on Valentine Street. Or by the theater.
By the theater.
Which was,
That's where I remember it being first, I think. Oh. Was by the...
Theater. Yeah, me too.
I think that's where it was first, and then it was moved. And how they moved it, I don't remember. I don't know. And
now, that Shell station that was there at the Bridge Court, right across the street, that Mike Billingsley's, it's an old service station that's
the
right
Texaco?
There by the Rancho Grande, that service station that does the Jeep tours.
Yeah, that used to be a Richfield. No, that was that Richfield?
That was there back when the Shell station in the Bridge Court was there. That service station was right there.
And I love that place. I love that little room, with all that great stuff in it right there. Yeah,
that was a service station. Oh. Then there was one across. There was another service station down.
There was a Texaco.
Texaco was right across from the motel.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the
What's there now? Where the roundabout comes down? It's a vacant lot there where the Texaco used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's vacant. Well, part of it, and then they've used part of it. There used to be a lot of service stations here because this was a crossroads, That's the only way you could get to California was through here. So
downtown was a Standard Oil station. It was a company-operated station. It's where my first job was right where the,
The museum, the corner of the museum where the horse statue is?
That corner. There was three service stations where the station on the corner of where I worked, Standard Oil, California, and across the street was a mobile station where
the
Circle K
is
now. Mm-hmm. And then across the street where the restaurant is, that's for lease now, was a Texaco. And then across the street on the other side was where the bus depot, the Greyhound bus depot was. Now, that was not a service station. But that's the middle of town, and there's three service stations and the Greyhound bus depot, all right?
I've seen a postcard showing those three, or at least two of those service stations.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, let's see, Bill Root. If you've talked to Bill Root, senior,
we'll be talking with him,
the old man. He was the proprietor of the Texaco station, and all the high school kids just loved him because he did really special things for us. We loved Bill Root.
Oh, what did you do?
Just the fact that he would let us come and get into his Coke machine. Back in those days, there was no stand-up Coke machines. There was those red stand. You had to dig down into them, and there was ice. And that's how they kept the sodas. They were in bottles, and they were down. And he'd give us stuff. And I used to get
his dad did all his business there too.
My dad did. Yeah, my dad did all his. He serviced all his trucks and his stuff there. His
pickups.
So
he probably paid a little more attention. A little nicer to his customers.
But the high school kids all liked him because it was it was so close to the high school because it was right down the street. Yeah.
What wonderful memories you have.
Oh, yeah. You could write three or four books. And there's so much to tell, and you keep saying, and I remember this, and I remember that, and the flood of 1970, and the water was right underneath the bridge. Of course, none of that stuff was there that's there now. Just the bridge, and the water was right up underneath it. I can't believe people were driving across it, and the water was right up underneath it. It was a terrible flood.
That's the same time that house got flooded down.
Let me hang up.
Yeah,
1970. I also worked in that house that got flooded. I was one of the guys that had to go down there and start mucking it out And I mean, what a terrible job that is. It's silt, you know, that's built up inside. And,
I can't talk right now.
But one of the things that happened, I noticed while I was working, I looked out this window out into the riverbed. The river had finally gone down. And here's this little white kitten. It's out there, and it's swatting at insects, you know, trying to get something to eat, I guess. And so I went out there, and I picked it up, and it looked, I don't know how, it had been washed down the river, because it's 5 miles down where this house was, down the river. So I brought it home. And
covered with mud.
Covered with mud, gave it to her, basically, and that was our... What
17
was,
years we had that cat.
We had that cat for 17 years. I mean, that was our number one cat that we ever owned.
He's buried out here in my little pet cemetery.
Aww.
And then, of course, then we get another cat that looks identical to it, all right? And that's another 17 years or so.
All of our animals pass a long time.
So, anyway, she still misses the one. She still goes in there and thinks her cat's laying on her bed or something. You know, I don't have that problem.
I do.
But,
I get
And, you know, like Bermuda Ranch, it was a ranch, then it was a dude ranch. We had our, that's where everybody did their eighth grade graduation party. That's where they did the high school graduation party in the original, because it was the ranch, the Burdens would let us go out there and do it. So the main lodge, which is still there today, and... that's what I would tell some of the patients when I was working out there. Well, this used to be, and this used to have a fireplace, and this is the way it was, the main building. But it was a small school, so all the kids could, you know. My graduating class was
32 or
5
or something.
And so, but the parents would have high school and eighth grade at the Bermuda Ranch, and when it was a ranch.
Wow, I haven't heard that before.
And the other story you probably haven't heard is down from the first swimming pool, besides the one over at the first big swimming pool. We called it the big one. But the first pool was over at Desert Cypress. And what was that guy's name?
Yeah, you would ask me that. Oh, the guy that built the...
up on the hill?
Up on the hill, yeah. Yeah. He's
Bill.
Bill...
Bill Bass.
Yeah.
Okay, and he owned what is today Desert Cypress, and it was a tiny little place, trailer park, tiny little thing. But there was a pool there, and that was our first pool, and it was very small, and it was very old, and that's where I grew up as a kid. And then they dug this hole where the present. Let's see, over at the park, Coffinger Park.
Mm-hmm.
I can tell you stories about that, too, that even he doesn't know, because I grew up right next to that. They dug this big hole, and they were going to build it. It was that way for several years. They were going to put the new community pool, and it would fill up with water when it would rain. And we'd go over there in muddy, dirty, filthy water, and we'd go over there and play in that water. And catch tadpoles. I know. I think about it. You know, but I'm healthy. And they finally filled it in and built a pool in the 50s, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, now that's gone. And they've redone that. But that also, that whole park before it was Coffinger Park, had big cement slabs because there were barracks over there. I don't remember the barracks. When we lived on Cavanaugh's, when it was a farming over there, the slabs were still there. There was, I can remember at least 6 slabs, big, long, where they had, because it wasn't a park. Of course, that was before the pool, too.
Did it go out into Coffinger Park itself, where the baseball field and...
That was, it started at the highway, and it went down, and I can remember they were, you know, like this, and let's see, and then it turned, and there was 2 of them that went that way, where the tennis courts are.
Yeah.
There was no tennis court, obviously. That was just dirt. And there was 2 more slabs that went in a different direction.
So that was all part of, like, army barracks?
It was like, and I don't know the history behind that, but it was some kind of a military barracks were there.
Well, we darn. I've never read or heard anything about that.
You don't hear anything, and I don't know why. Somebody's got to know something, but I don't know. I don't know what. We roller skated, but we'd have to take my mom's broom and go over there and clean it off. So because back in those days, the roller skates were metal, metal wheels. And you couldn't, you had to have, had to be clean to roller skate on it. So I remember having, when I was a freshman, there was a high school dance over there on the one of the slabs that was up close to the other side, turned the other. Most of them on the highway were going this way. And then there's a couple that went that way.
That doesn't help us. We don't understand.
Well,
you're going like that. I don't know whether
they're going on an angle.
North, south, or east, west?
Well, they were, if the highway's here, they were like this.
So okay. Parallel to the highway.
No, well, they were off-centered from there. If the highway's here, they were like this. So, but I don't know, you know, I don't know why nobody ever talks about that. But there were no barracks when I was a little girl. And we lived in the neighborhood. Of course, that was off farmland. Barnett's, it was called Barnett Addition, and Mr. Barnett owned the farm. It was a huge farm, and he had crops and all kinds of stuff, and he watered. And then they put in a, he sold part of it to, I guess, the city, because I remember there was a dirt road, and we lived on the dirt road, Cavanaugh Avenue. And I remember
that's
when
that's pretty well in town. That's Cavanaugh's. That's right by the bridge. Yeah.
Wow. And
did you ever tell her the story about the Dairy Queen that was right across the street from the?
Well, before the Dairy Queen, there was. Well, I remember when natural gas was put into Wickenburg. We all had butane tanks. We'd set up on the butane tanks, and that was our horse. And you had to have butane was delivered. Everybody had butane, and then I remember them putting in. I was a little girl, but I remember the ditches of the natural gas lines.
And then I'm talking about that restaurant that's on the bridge on Cavanaugh's. What's the name of the restaurant?
It's called Cowboy
Cafe.
Cafe or something, right?
Yeah, and it used to. It was originally built as a Dairy Queen. And the mortician's wife ran the Dairy Queen. And we lived across the street, of course, or across the highway. We called it
and the mortician's wife, husband was the Coppinger?
Coppinger.
That's where the Coppinger Park comes in, all right? Yes. Coppinger
and
Park.
His wife started the Dairy Queen, and we'd go over across there, and she let us make our own Dairy Queens.
The funeral director's name was Coppinger.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Howard?
Howard Coppinger.
Howard Coppinger, who had some sons that were very outstanding, probably some of the best athletes that came. One of them played at ASU. And
doesn't he live here again? Doesn't Howard live?
I don't know if he does. I haven't seen him.
Well, who's the guy we met up at Charlie's that night? I thought you said that was Howard Coppinger.
I don't remember doing that. I just know that they stayed in the Valley, the Coppinger boys did. They were big-time boosters at ASU and stuff, but they came out of Wickenburg. And their dad, of course, is the one that donated the property there for the park.
Mm-hmm.
And
so he must have bought the barrack land. That would be fun. I'd like to know. I just never followed up on that.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find out. If I learn anything, I'll let you know.
Please do.
That's a whole new story for me.
Yeah.
And I was telling Dan when I met you out here in your driveway, you're the second person this week to tell me about the Bums Jungle.
There were several Bums Jungles. There was a Bums Jungle over where we lived, over here by that Cowboy Cafe, across the wash.
Because the railroad runs right by there as well, right through town here. And this, of course, was a good dropping off spot right down here.
When my parents built the house down here that we lived in, all of this was Bums Jungle. There wasn't anything down here.
It was all mesquite trees. Right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Mesquite
trees.
Yeah, when we first moved down here, we'd go down here to this low spot down here, and it'd be, you could still see the remnants of where they had their rocks and fireplace and old tin cans and things, you know, from years and years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, when we built
down. Well, you never did tell her about that. Reminds me of going over to Henry Wickenburg's original house.
Can I ask you about that? The tunnel house. Tell
yes.
me about it.
Oh, it's been a while since I've been over there because I used to take my kids because we used to be able to go when there was no houses here. There was nothing up on. We were at the edge of our house was the edge of the desert. And if you went up, I mean, there was that was not here. Nothing was here but our house, and it was all a bum's jungle. And we were at the edge of the desert. So the kids and I would go up to the top of the hill and a couple of things, and we'd go over to the cave, the tunnel house. You never could get through, though. It had too many cave-ins. But on the other side of the mountain where the cave, on the other side was that little house. And when my kids were little, that still had walls up on it. And it was, there were walls. And you could see a lot of the house, the little house on the other side.
But you can't now because it's been knocked down. Who lives there now is Simpsons built their home. And right behind their house, they have a driveway that comes behind your house. And right there is their kid is on my golf team. That's why I know. I go up there quite often. He's my number one golfer, by the way. Huh. And but right there, you can see the entrance, and it's all kind of caved in. Mm-hmm, and you can see the other side of the mountain there where it was, and it's all caved in.
That was also a golf course up there, but it was a dirt golf course.
Oh.
On that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, up on the top of the mountain where... Where
a dirt golf course?
There was a dirt golf. It's flat up there, and you can see it. Now, who told me that? Some old person that it was a part of a golf course, and that's why it was flat, but it was dirt. On the other side, you went down into Simpson's pastures.
Huh. I didn't know anything about that. Mm-hmm. Never heard
and
of
I don't,
that.
And I don't know. This person that was up there with us, and God, who was it? Years ago.
You'll have to research that, because I was there. Somebody asked me that was. I thought the Wickenburg Country Club was.
Well, this was not. This was something. It wasn't a full fledged golf course, but it was. There were. It was may have been places to tee off of. I don't know because I don't know anymore.
Well, that was a guest ranch at one time back in the '20s. Mm-hmm. You know the Simpsons Ranch.
Oh, what was it called?
Oh, I know.
Bar FX.
Bar FX. Yeah, that was Tony O'Brien.
Tony O'Brien.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew Tony.
He was quite a historian.
Oh, tell me about him.
Well, he was interesting. He
knew a lot.
Yeah, and I always thought it was amazing how he had tried to sell. Later in his life, he would sell property that he owned. And he would put an ad in a paper, and it'd be about 3 inches thick and about 6 inches across. And he'd outline exactly everything that was involved in the property. And his method of selling would be with either cash down and 10% of interest, times 25 years at so-and-so at 6% interest, and he'd have this all laid out like he was going to do it himself. And he sold right on the corner of Safeway out there, where the new Safeway store is, where the intersection of Vulture Peak, Vulture
that's
Mine
right,
Road,
that was his. Uh-huh,
and
that was
where
his.
Safeway is, he
was
owned
his.
That property
he owned
there.
That property, uh-huh.
And for years. And he wouldn't sell it. I mean, you were going to meet his price if you tried to come down and jip him out of what he was going to get for it. He would take gold, He would. There were certain things he would accept and certain things he wouldn't. Well, he had an idea one time. His property was right up against the high school over there as well. In fact, it's part of Simpson's old property. The cows used to get into our football field over there at the high school. And, no, I take it back. What happened was we started getting these ground squirrels that would dig holes into the ground, and Tony O'Brien came up with a bright idea. And I still remember this. He told Ralph, he said, well, I can take care of that for you. And he said, well, how? He says, well, during the summer when you're not having practice, and I'll just let my cows come in here, and they can munch on their grass. And what will happen is as they walk around, their hooves will push down those holes. All that really happened was we ended up with a field that was just like this,
A lumpy field.
A lump. And Ralph was so mad. He just got really upset at that. So we ended up, we had to get the field graded and leveled again, all right? And He never spoke highly of Tony O'Brien after that at all. I mean,
our first sewer was right there by the high school.
Right,
so
yeah. There's a sewer back there, the town sewer.
Right beside the high school football field. And, you know, boy, did it stink during the games. Oh.
We called it the Sewer Bowl.
Yeah. It was the town, and they parked a, it was, you know, small town, so they parked all the little trucks and stuff over there. Oh, sometimes the smell come through when we were playing a football game. Oh, stunk pretty bad.
Yeah, just if the wind was blowing the right way, I mm-hmm. guess, you know, it was just one of those things.
Wow.
Of course, later on, they moved the sewers now.
Way down there by
past
Simpsons.
Another mile past Simpsons, there's a relatively modern sewer out there.
Yeah.
With ponds and the whole bit.
Did you ever go to any of the rodeos that were held in town?
I did, but I was a kid, little kid, with my grandparents. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, I tell some of the patients at Remuda, this used to be a rodeo grounds. And I can remember driving up with my grandparents. And also out at Lost Cap, they would go out there. There were several places where, before there was any of the roping arenas or any of that stuff, I mean, there was just, the ranches would take turns having rodeos.
So the rodeos weren't just for the people at the ranches, they were for anybody who wanted to.
You could go watch. Oh, yeah, you could all go. We could go. And my grandparents happened to like it. I just liked going with them. It was fun. I never was into rodeoing at all. But I liked going with them and watching them. Yeah.
We have covered
a lot. You're gonna have to edit this. It's gonna take you a long time to
It's not me. They're sending this out to somebody else to make this transcript.
Oh really?
Yeah, what they'll do is they'll send this out to a company that will make a paper transcript, and if you'd like a copy, I can get that for you. You know, you can keep it, you know, for yourselves and for your kids.
I'd like to save my mom's, the one that my mom did.
I'll see if they have that. Some of them, it's just the recording, but they might be making transcripts of that as well. Esther Deck, I'll remember that.
When she died, that was her maiden name, was Deck. I don't know whether she went by Doom. She remarried after my dad died.
To Mitchell, yeah.
Esther Mitchell.
But she wasn't really known as that. She was Esther Doom.
Esther Doom.
Okay. I'll see what name.
It's
under.
This
okay.
I read this in this is my, oh, I feel sure. My, yeah, you want to see what it would look like up in Congress when we were kids?
Oh, yeah.
This is me and my brother, Curly. That's my mother, and that's my dad. And that's,
look at how stylish she is. Oh, my God, I love it.
It was back in the early 40s, middle 40s era. Mm-hmm. I was born in 42, he was born in 43. And that's my dad, and that's my mom, and and then here are all the boys in my family, me being the oldest, on down to the youngest.
Wow.
This one has passed away, and he's still here. And there's a sister that's not in here. All right, this is her, right here. That's my sister there. Was married to this guy here.
That picture of the station up there?
Yeah,
that's where
I'm going next. And that was my one sister. Uh-huh. And she's passed away. And here's my brothers again, here, and me, and there's Sam and his wife, and Donnie is right there. But here we are now. When we had that station, there's a picture of that station, all right? It was written up in the magazine. This was in the Arizona... What was the name of that magazine? The Arizona Highways?
Arizona Highways.
And it showed a picture of the early 50s. This is what it looked like. And then here we were as kids growing up, all right? And there's Donnie and Dennis and Sam. And there's Robert.
Like she's going to remember their names.
Well, I know. But I'm doing it for myself, so I know who I was going here, all right? And myself there. And we all worked at the station as we grew up, all right?
Uh-huh.
So that's, anyway, that's...
That's awesome.
And your dad rescuing all the people there that would boil over going up Yarnell Hill?
Oh, yeah.
It was
that's
just
why we used that truck there. They'd get halfway up Yarnell and couldn't make it all the way up, and we'd have to go up there and pull them all the way up.
Wow.
Some water bags. That's what.
Oh yeah.
Which
that,
one?
That, who's the?
That's
the gentleman, the older
that's
brother.
My dad's dad.
Wow.
And that's
wow.
And my dad. This they
but
had
he was
a place.
From, he was from Kentucky.
Kentucky is where they came from.
Yeah.
And my last name was Doom. And see, I never could figure out where that name came from. I thought it was really unusual. I was the only person in Arizona with the last name of Doom.
Yeah.
Come to find out, they when they immigrated to America, they settled in the Ohio River, right on the corner of Kentucky. They had all kinds of property and ground, and they had farms there. There's a cemetery called the Doom Cemetery.
Several of those.
Hundreds of Dooms buried in there. I don't know if there's hundreds, but there's the acres of them. Going back in the 1700s all the way through, they just settled in that one area and all had families, large families. And then it is spread out. My dad was born in 1902, and he left the farm, went to St. Louis, and worked. And it was during the Depression and stuff like that. And worked his way west, came all the way out to California, and then was on his way back. Him and his brother. And they stopped in Phoenix, and it was like January. And
nice.
And
nice.
Thought, wow, it's great. You know, really liked the weather. Yeah. And they got jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Never left. And that's where he met my mother.
Wow. Where did that family immigrate from?
Germany, mostly. But we don't know. Germany's changed so many times. The area is hard to pinpoint exactly. But we thought it was Germany, Belgium, somewhere in that area, you know.
And they could have been a different name, and they just, you know, anglicized it even, you know, maybe try
there's
to make
a possibility
it
of that, yeah. There are some people that have the name Dooms with an S on the end of it, too. But anyway, we can go back. I've got records of them back in Kentucky in the 1700s. They owned slaves. They had slaves. They had, they were granted a section of ground during the Revolutionary War for serving during the Revolution. I mean, it was... I can't even remember the name. The guy who signed the... I got a copy of the document.
Oh, wow.
So, cool. There, it goes way back, but I go back occasionally. They have a reunion back there every year, Dooms Reunion, and it's amazing to see how many Dooms are live in that area.
That's amazing.
But they're farmers, you know. They're basically farmers.
Yeah. My family, too.